Hello, welcome to the Most Dangerous Podcast. How are you this week, James?
Good evening. I'm not too bad. How are you?
I'm good, yeah. I'm not too bad.
I've had a
quiet week, actually.
Have you? Yeah, me too. Not really much has happened. I did just get off the phone to Virgin Media, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, God. It made my piss boil, seriously. Actually, it's like a 90-minute phone call. I won't go into the details. It's boring. Like, everybody's had the experience, haven't they? Where you just kind of... And do you know what? I will go into detail because it's pissed me off. So it's the usual 18-month phone call to Virgin Media because the contract's coming to an end. You know, you dread it, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I've got to do it. I've got to phone them up and cancel the service because my bill's going up by 100%. So I did a bit of like compare the meerkat thing, found a new service, come across this decent one. It's like 40 odd quid or whatever. I was like, I'll go for that. Put my details in. Phoned up Virgin Media and they got through to like the first kind of barrier, you know, where they go, oh, really? Are you sure you want to leave?
Yeah.
Let's see if we can do you a better deal. So I did all that. No, in front of, so like my bill's about £40. I think it's decent, decent broadband service and all that. And I was like, oh, it's too expensive. It's going up to 80. I'm not paying double for what I'm getting at the moment. So the lady was like, that's fine. Let's see what deal we can do for you. Oh, the best I can do is 58 or something. I was like, no, I just said it's going up too much. So forget it. Like, no, don't leave. And then they put you through to this other site. The other retention bit, don't they?
Yeah.
So I did all that. So that was the best offer they could give me, 58 quid for the service that I've already got, which I'm already paying about 44. I got through to the other guy on in the actual real cancellations bit.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this other company has offered me this service for this amount and it's this speed and all that. And he just goes, yeah, no worries. In fact, I can do it cheaper for you. God's sake, it's just taking me an hour and a half to get through to this point.
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah, all right then. Just do that. Just do that.
Our mutual friend, Rich, he does the annual phone call to Sky. Similar thing. You know, I'm out of contract now. Basically, I want something cheaper or something for free. Mm-hmm. And like you do, you phone, you go, yeah, I'd like to cancel my service. And they go, oh, shit, wait, right, what can we do for you? So I remember one year he said to me, oh, I'm just going to phone and tell them I want to cancel and they'll like start throwing stuff at me. And he got this woman and he phoned and said, yeah, I'm just phoning to cancel my Sky service because, you know, the bill's gone too high. She goes, okay, yeah, that's fine. So we'll start cancelling it down for you.
I think that's the best way to do it. I've done it a few times. Like, yeah. You leave it to the very last. Because I don't have the TV anymore or anything like that. Cause it's way too expensive.
Yeah.
So the best way to, what I did at one point is exactly that and just go, no, cancelling. And you're guaranteed a day before the service is due to cut. It is a bit risky
because,
you know, they might not, but usually 2 or 3 days, maybe a day before it's about to go off, they phone you up and go, just have everything for half the price.
Yeah. I suppose it's there just retain you at all costs. What they hope is that in 6 months they can start putting the price up and you don't notice, you know?
Yeah.
They retain.
Anyway, we're turning into Martin Lewis here. That's good.
So, James, before we go on to anything else, I'll be honest and tell the listeners if I just had to get up and remove my dog from the room.
It's a euphemism.
Yeah. but I just tripped over a 5-kilogram medicine ball that I bought about 9 years ago, and the only time I've lifted it was to carry it home from the shop.
Why is it still there? Why is it not in your loft or in your shed?
I've moved twice since I bought this. But in my last house, I had a bit of a slope in the driveway and I was tidying out the garage. And the medicine ball rolled out of the garage, down the driveway and out onto the road. And there was a wee boy that was about 8 out in the road playing. He was friends with my daughter, Madison, a couple other kids were out playing. And I said to him, I can't actually remember his name. Let's call him Danny. I said, yeah, Danny, can you pass me that ball? And he goes, yeah, watch me boost it. And he ran and kicked it as hard as he could.
Oh,
but
ouch.
The ball didn't move. his ankle just gave in. And he was in plaster cast for 8 weeks.
Bloody hell, really? Broke his ankle,
yeah.
Yeah, oh my God. You did that to me once, though. Do you remember that? We were in your garden
Oh, the big ball.
Yeah, that's right. Your dog, Teddy, he had a ball that he chewed on. It was like, you know, tennis ball size, wasn't it? And like, I'll be honest, I'm not the greatest football player in the world.
It's bigger than a tennis ball. It was like twice a tennis ball.
Nah, it wasn't that big. I managed. It was smaller than a football.
Yeah, we were smaller, I suppose.
Yeah, you could hold it in one hand. Yeah. And anyway, like I say, if I was any good at football, I wouldn't be sitting here. So, but anyway, so I think you just picked it up from the other side of the garden and went, yeah, volley that. And I hit it. It was the sweetest volley I've ever hit in my life. Right on the laces. And it was the heaviest ball I've ever kicked in my life.
It was like solid rubber.
Like my leg just went the other way. Yeah.
This was funny. This was like Billy Connolly talks about a prank where you fill a football with cement and leave it outside a pub at 11 o'clock at night. There's always a load of piss guys go, yeah, I'll watch this. Yeah. Another thing that I meant to ask is, I wonder if you know the answer to this. I was making packed lunches this morning. I was cutting up seedless grapes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, what do they plant to grow seedless grapes?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Do you get seedless grape seeds?
Yeah, that's one for the listeners, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe they just like plant a clipping off the vine.
Maybe. Yeah, true, actually. Yeah, because plants can breed like that, can't they?
Yeah, that's a guess. I don't know.
So anyway, so
some of those listeners that have turned off, don't worry, we'll be back again next week.
So James, before we go on to my subject this week, I believe you've got some news for us.
News. I don't even know what your subject is this week, because you told me not to tell me. So that's going to be interesting to find out. But yeah, in the meantime, I do have some dangerous news. All right, so number one this week. So applications are now open to work in Antarctica's famous Penguin Post Office. So I know we did an episode about jobs ages ago now. So this could potentially be... could fit into that list that we did. It wasn't a list, was it? But you know, it could potentially be a dangerous job. So the job post,
Penguin Post Office.
I'll tell you now. Okay. So the successful applicants will be self-motivated, empathetic, and fine with showering once every 2 weeks. The shop in Port Lockroy is the southernmost post office in the world, and it frequently smells like penguin poo.
Nice.
Yeah, so it's a post office on Antarctica. This year, there are 3 positions on offer, and they're only open to UK residents. So this post office, as well as processing up to 80,000 letters and postcards a year, staff must also run the shop and welcome roughly 18,000 cruise passengers who stop by. So it's on and out, but it's like a post in Antarctica, and you get those cruises, don't you, that do sort of round that bit. And I guess it's a post office for those people.
This is basically just somewhere for people to send a postcard home from.
Yeah, see, I've been there. Look, there's the stamp. It's been stamped. So successful applicants will need to have a range of skills. Employees have to sort posts, sell stamps, look after the building and run the gift shop. They will have to put up with basic living conditions and be happy with their own company.
I'd love that job.
Would you? I don't know though. Hang on, let me just finish this section and then we'll talk about it.
Right, okay. Because it's the dangerous bit.
Well, there's not really anything dangerous about it, but apart from well. So the application form, it does warn people about hygiene.
Right.
Okay, so it says we have no running water on the island, so washing facilities are very basic. Water is collected from jerry cans from visiting ships. There are no shower facilities at Port Lockroy, so staff are expected to be comfortable living within these limitations, yet still keeping high hygiene levels. Visiting ships will offer showers approximately once per week, but when the weather conditions are poor, you could go up to 2 weeks without any visitors or a shower.
Oh dear.
Staff also need to count roughly 1,500 Gentoo penguins that live on the colony. So I guess it's kind of like a conservation stroke post right, office yeah. job.
Penguins are okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So applications for this close on the 18th of March. So that's tomorrow. I mean, we're recording on Friday, but this goes on the Sunday. So
yeah.
if you are interested, you've got a day. and the season starts in November and it will end in March 2025.
Wow.
So if anyone's interested in isolating themselves in Antarctica for 6 months, go for it. It's there. The opportunity is available.
What's the pay like?
Oh, I don't know. I'd imagine it's pretty good.
Yeah, they've got to pay quite well for that.
Yeah. But I mean, there's literally films about this mm-hmm. where people go and isolate themselves for 6 months and yeah. come back fucking insane.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's not, yeah, all right. It's not on face value, it's not dangerous. But mm-hmm. there's so many things going on in my mind about how wrong this could go.
Yeah.
yeah. like, imagine if it's just, if there's a storm, you know, for. Yeah. 3 weeks and no ships can get through. You can't get any water. Mm-hmm. You know, you lose contact with anybody from the outside world, and there's just three of you in this hut, all staring yeah. at each other. Like similar to that Simpsons episode where
in the cabin,
yeah, all just sat there like in like potato sacks, looking at each other.
They all think the other one wants to kill them.
Yeah, like, I'm going to go and count the penguins again.
I was just going to say, imagine someone goes back to see how they get on. There's just one guy sitting naked, Swiss Army knife in his hand, two dead. Two dead other workers and 1,500 dead penguins.
yeah. And he's eating like a tongue sandwich or something.
Yeah. interesting thing, not to make this podcast too long, but you said it's UK residents, and obviously this is a British bit of Antarctica, because I've read that like most countries in the world all own their own little bit of Antarctica.
Oh, do they?
Or they lease it or so. I don't think anyone can own it, but there's like a bit of Antarctica that's Britain's, there's a bit that's America's, a bit that's Argentina's, yeah, right. and all these different countries have their own little section of Antarctica for their research and stuff like that. And a few of them do actually squabble over, that's my bit of Antarctica, actually not, so it's our bit of Antarctica.
Ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know, I was under the impression, because it says this year it's open for UK residents, so I was under the impression perhaps they do it kind of yeah. a different year, a different country gets it. I don't know.
See, I don't think Antarctica actually is. I mean, it's obviously a country, it's land, but I don't think it has its own identity.
And it's not like a state, is it?
Or anything? Yeah. No, it's just land, because yeah. it's unusable mainly.
Until all the ice melts.
Yeah,
loads of oil underneath it. And all the Russians and that are going, we own all of it.
That's it. That was interesting.
It's like the moon as well. Like, it always makes me laugh, this, like how you can just claim stuff, like how countries can just go, see that moon up there? Mm-hmm. That's ours, that.
Yeah, but I saw someone that for a present, someone had bought them a square meter of land on the moon.
Yeah, you can buy
it. Did you buy that off?
Yeah.
Just some gift company, because you could sell it, couldn't you? I could start a set. I've just sold you a square meter of land on the moon. You know,
thanks.
If you want,
it's not yours to sell, though, mate.
But go and fucking check; it's there.
And stars, you can buy a star as well, can't you?
Name a star off. So I've named a star after you. I'd rather have $49.95. To be honest, yeah. Fucking star named after me. That's the Colin star. That one.
Yeah, I can't even see it.
I know. Ridiculous.
It's up there somewhere. The light pollution just blocks it all out. So anyway, for my second story, our second story.
Okay.
A 52-year-old American man consulted a doctor this week after his unusual migraines became more frequent and severe, and they were not responding to medication. Scans revealed a number of tapeworm eggs in his brain.
Ooh.
This man was diagnosed with, now this is a really, you know how I get with these difficult medical terms. Neurocysticercosis, caused by tinnitus. I think that's how you say it. I'll go with that. It's a form of infection from larva cysts from the pork tapeworm.
What the hell?
And this can get into tissue like muscles and brain.
Yeah.
So I'll explain how the man got it.
Go on.
So research has said the man had not travelled to any high-risk areas, but on further questioning, the patient denied eating raw or street food, but admitted to a habit of eating lightly cooked non-crispy bacon for most of his life.
Right.
Yeah, so research has said that they believe this infection was transmitted via auto-infection after improper hand washing after he contracted tinnitus from handling sort of bacon and pork and things like that.
Not cooking his bacon properly.
And not cooking his bacon properly, yeah.
Which is strange because everyone knows crispy bacon's the best.
Yeah, I know. You can't get wrong with crispy bacon. The man's migraines improved when he was given anti-parasitic and anti-inflammatory medication. And he goes on to say that people at most risk for such infections, it's usually because of poor hand washing and poor hygiene, or eating contaminated food or drinking contaminated water. So, that's, parasites in the brain.
That's rank to think that bacon, even if you cook it and kill them all, has tapeworm eggs in it.
Yeah, but I don't know about this, mate. No. I mean, this was from a reasonably respected source.
Yeah.
Sky News. So, you know, it's not that shit. Well, you know what I mean. But I thought bacon was cured, and I thought you could eat bacon. Not that I do, but I thought you could eat...
You can eat smoked bacon, but not unsmoked.
Smoked
bacon's, like, cured, and unsmoked isn't, I think.
It's just raw.
Like that. Yeah, so. But yeah, I mean, you see on like Facebook and stuff, little videos of people saying, "Oh, this is what super noodles look like under a microscope." And there's all these little insects
in them. And I don't believe that. Yeah. I saw the one like under people's nails, and I've heard that before, where there's little kind of worms and stuff that live under the muck in your nails. Mm-hmm. I've heard about that, but I did see the one about the noodles.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not buying that, mate.
There probably is tiny little parasitic bugs on everything. There's bugs that live in your eyelash follicles and stuff like
that's
that.
That's true. And on your skin as well and all.
If you zoom into anything close enough, there's probably bugs there.
Yeah. But then have you seen like what stomach acid can do to metal?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be too worried about little bugs like that.
So
parasites and dangerous jobs.
Nice.
All covered in two snippets of news.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next one. So, do you like tennis?
Do I like tennis?
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, I remember we used to play tennis a little bit.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys that starts watching it at, like, the semi-finals.
Yeah, I'm a bit...
the tournaments, you know?
Yeah, I'm a fair-weather fan, I suppose. Yeah. I mean, I like it more than other sports. I think I can sit through... Sometimes the Grand Slams go on a bit too long.
Yeah.
If you get the ATP tours, they're the three setters, you can handle them a bit better.
Yeah.
So this relates to tennis. So at the moment, there's a tournament going on, the Indian Wells Open tournament.
Okay.
And on Thursday, so yesterday, as recording, a swarm of bees, forced a nearly two-hour disruption in the quarterfinal match between Carlos Alcaraz and Alexander Zverev.
Mm-hmm.
Alcaraz, yeah. So basically, a swarm of bees caused a delay in a tennis match yesterday. Alcaraz started swatting the bees that were buzzing around him before running for cover, and the match was suspended 19 minutes in, and it caused a delay of 1 hour and 48 minutes. So what had actually happened is dozens of bees had attached themselves to the overhead spider camera that traverses the court. And obviously whilst the match has been playing, the bees have been disturbed and then just swarmed the players. Now the best bit about this story is that a man without any protective covering went over to the camera and used a vacuum cleaner to clear them off. So, you know, he's pretty hard, isn't he?
Yeah. Supposed to be protecting the bees, aren't we?
Yeah, well, if you vacuum him, it doesn't kill him. You just release him into the wild after that.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Put it on blow. Have you ever seen a vacuum cleaner with blow?
Not in real life, no.
No, I haven't. You see it on the cartoons and...
That's it, yeah, it's always on cartoons. It must be like an old-fashioned thing or something, I don't know.
I don't know what the purpose would be for it. It's like those leaf blowers, they're really stamped there for either. just around.
That's to blow the leaves into the neighbour's garden. Yeah. And his problem. He has to get his rake out.
Yeah. So, Fraser, that's this week's news.
Yeah, that was, yeah, a deal. Those tapeworm eggs are just making me think now.
Yeah, you're worrying about those. Like, what have I eaten?
I know.
Do I wash my hands enough?
So, James, thanks for your news stories. Yeah, that tapeworm, well, that'll keep me up at night now. But I do think I might apply for that job in the post office, get 6 months apiece.
Yeah, maybe we should both apply.
I think so,
and
yeah.
Then we can just do like 6 months worth of pod. Forget, yeah. Fuck the penguins. They're all right.
How many are there? There's 1,500 roughly.
And then the third member can just run the post office for us. And then we'll just do the pod like constantly.
That's it. Sounds good. But what would we pod about? So this week's episode's about penguins. I haven't told you about what I'm doing this week, and I don't know why. To be honest, I don't know. I didn't want this. It's a really interesting thing, but there's not that much about it. And I thought if you go and read about it, then you'll just know everything I'm going to say.
You can't do this. I've been waiting, like anticipating this for like a week. And you can't now come on and go, I don't know why I didn't say anything. It's dead short.
It's not short. It's interesting. But what I want to do before we go into it, I want to take you back to our very, very first episode, Mountains.
Oh, yeah.
Mount Everest car crash episode.
Yeah.
And right at the start of it, between the bangs and crashes and whatever else was going on in the background, can't remember if it was you or me, but someone was banging and crashing.
Yeah,
we were talking about, we were introducing what we were doing. We were talking about some of the subjects we were going to do. And I remember you saying, oh, I'll do fish. And, you know, we were talking about, there was, you know, cheese, mountains, and some of the things, ideas we had. And I said that I was going to do one about a dance that can actually kill you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I was lying. I thought, oh, that'd be really interesting, a dance that's so dangerous you could die. So I told you I was going to do a pod on a dance that could kill you. And you said, what, a dance that can actually kill you? And I said, yeah, there's a dance that can actually kill you. And I was just making it up, I'll be honest. And at the time, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So you'd not come across?
I hadn't come across. I thought you there just must be something out there, right?
So I thought, all right.
So the reason we never did that pod is I spent the next 6 weeks hunting for a dance that was so dangerous you could die. And there was like some Russian dance where they throw swords towards each other and stuff. I'm just clutching at straws here.
I thought you'd like found something and we were like, right, yeah, I'm going to do this.
No, I sounded dead confident, but I just thought, you know, there must be something out there. But in my panics, I came across essentially a dance that can kill you, but it's a bit different. It's not like I was looking for a dance that was so dangerous when you do a certain move, you know, your head falls off or something.
It's not actually a dance. It's a gun.
Yeah, it's like a dance, but it's a gun. So, but what I came across in my research is a thing called Dance Mania. And that's not one of the CDs we bought in the late 90s.
I've got that. I've got three.
Do you remember Tartan Techno?
Yeah. Did you still got that?
No, I threw all my CDs away.
I still got mine.
Yeah. I kept like a couple of collector edition CDs and just chucked the whole lot in the bin. Threw 1,000 DVDs away.
Big mistake.
Mental, I know. Anything that said kind of limited edition had a cardboard sleeve I kept, you know, kind of special ones. But yeah, so Dance Mania. So Dancing Mania, which also was known as the Dancing Plague, was a social phenomenon that occurred primarily in mainland Europe between the 14th and 17th centuries.
Right.
And basically involved groups of people dancing erratically, sometimes thousands at a time. And the mania affected adults and children who danced until they collapsed from exhaustion and injuries and sometimes died.
No, I'm a little bit confused here. So Why didn't they just stop, though?
We'll get on to that.
I don't get it.
So basically, one of the first major outbreaks was in a place called Aachen in the Holy Roman Empire, which today is basically Germany. And this was in 1374, and it quickly spread throughout Europe. There was one particularly notable outbreak that occurred in Strasbourg in 1518, which we'll come back to.
Outbreak of what? Dancing?
Dance mania, yeah. People dancing themselves to death.
I don't understand.
Right, we'll get there. So basically it affected thousands of people across centuries, and it wasn't an isolated event. It was well documented, but it was poorly understood. And remedies for dance mania was basically based on guesswork. So the old, you know, drill a hole in his head and see if he gets any better. One of the things they tried to do is they tried to get some musicians to accompany the dancers due to a belief that the music would treat the mania, but that just encouraged more people to join in.
So these are people who are just uncontrollably dancing.
Yes, uncontrollably.
Until they drop dead.
That's it, yeah.
Like river dance, like...
Yeah.
Can't stop.
So some of the sort of early theories, they just thought it was, you know, either a religious cult behind it, you know, getting people to dance as they do. And you ever see those mad religions in America? The Americans are great, the evangelists and all that. There's like guys that are like, they're like senators, but they're running about like a lunatic dancing on a Sunday and speaking in tongues and all that. Yeah. Not cases. No, I mean, to be fair, right, if that floats your boat, then there's no harm in it. But I still think they're not cases. Yeah.
I mean, I think there might be a little bit of harm in it.
Yeah, but maybe.
That's just me.
And, so they thought it was possibly a religious cult thing that was causing it. And, you know...
I'm a little bit lost for words here because, I don't see how that was even a thought. Like, what, you were in this cult? And, cause, like, why would you join that cult? if it makes you do that, you're like, I'll give that a miss.
Do you know what it makes me think of? You know, Father Ted, you know, the dancing priest?
yeah, that's that. I had a thing in my head.
He dies, doesn't he?
I can't remember. There was something in my head. I was like, yeah, there's a sitcom where someone just can't stop dancing. Yeah, that was it, yeah.
Ted, like, needs a car, and he's got one, and he has to go and borrow it off him. And he's just like dancing in his living room, constantly dancing.
This is crazy. Is this a real thing, though?
It's a real thing, yeah.
I'm struggling to believe, you know, after the revelation of a dance that can kill you.
Like, this is real. It's been documented through history.
Dance mania.
Yeah. So one of the other speculated causes, they think, was a mass psychogenic illness, in which physical symptoms with no physical cause are observed to affect a group of people as a form of social influence.
So like someone starts doing it and then...
Yeah, maybe
someone
just...
Someone else goes, oh, look at him.
Why is he dancing? I want to dance too.
But then before you know, the whole village is like dancing down to the farm to get some...
Yeah. And one of the sort of things that's been noticed, that was usually people in hardship and... You know, the sort of people in real poverty. It was never the rich people doing it. You know, it was always like the people lowest. Lowest of society? You can't really say that. The poorest of society.
Yeah.
Back then it was really hard lives for them, the peasants and stuff. So there was an author that had sort of studied it called Robert Bartholomew. He noted that people would travel from miles around to join the dance mania, and they'd actually bring customs from other places. So it wasn't just like a local thing. People would actually travel to join in the dance.
So you've got a group of sick people, basically, and then other people are going, oh, that's look at the fun that they're having. It could be like a parasite in the brain, you know, being eaten like...
Possibly a tapeworm.
Raw bacon. It makes you go a bit mad.
A dancing tapeworm. Bartholomew also noted that some of them paraded about naked, made obscene gestures, some had sexual intercourse, Others acted like animals and jumped, hopped, and leaped about. And oh, basically, weird. they never stopped. Some danced till they broke ribs and subsequently died. Some laughed, some cried, some sang. The color red drove them crazy, and onlookers were attacked and forced to join in the dance.
Right. This is weird. I don't want to spoil anything.
Yep.
But does anyone get to the bottom of this?
There's some theories. There's some theories. Okay.
Right.
But not really, no.
Oh. This is crazy, isn't it?
So the most documented event was one in Strasbourg that I mentioned earlier in 1518. Ooh. So basically, the outbreak in Strasbourg began in July 1518 when a woman called Frau Trofea began to dance fervently and uncontrollably in a street in Strasbourg.
It was like an epileptic fit or something.
Well, it goes on. Trofea kept up the constant dancing for a week.
Wow.
Soon, three dozen others joined in, and by August, the dancing plague had claimed 400 victims. Dancers were beginning to collapse. It said some died from a stroke or a heart attack. No one knew what caused the reaction, which meant no one understood how to remedy it. By early September, the outbreak began to subside when the dancers were sent to a mountain shrine to pray for absolution.
Dancing up the mountain.
Yeah.
That's very weird.
It is. So historical sources agree that there was an outbreak of dancing after a single woman started dancing, and the dancing did not seem to die down. It lasted for such a long time that it even attracted the attention of the authorities, until the council gave up authority to the physicians, who prescribed the afflicted to dance themselves free of it.
So, you like dancing, do you? Yeah. Dance it away.
Dance yourself better. So there's claims that guild halls were refurbished to accommodate the dancing, as well as musicians and strong people to help keep those dealing with the dancing mania to stay upright.
That's crazy. Imagine if I just start happening. It's weird, like, because you just said she just started dancing, so yeah. She just stood there and just goes...
But there's a theory that I love, because it ties into another podcast, but we'll come to that. But yeah, basically, setting them up with halls to dance in backfired. The council was forced to ban public dancing as people danced in fear that it was a punishment from Saint Vitus. And to be free of sin, many joined in on the dancing epidemic.
Oh, I see. Okay. So you ban public dancing.
Yeah.
But then there's people who can't stop dancing.
Mm-hmm.
So do they get like executed?
Yeah, basically.
Can't do that.
Those that were danced were ordered to go to the shrine of Saint Vitus,
that's the one up the mountain.
Yeah, and they had to wear red shoes that were sprinkled with holy water, and had painted crosses on the tops and the soles.
But red sends them bonkers.
I know, that's probably why it wasn't working. So there's another there was a similar phenomenon in Italy at the same time. They call tarantism, in which the victims were said to have been poisoned by a tarantula or a scorpion, but it caused the same dancing mania.
Clutching at straws, that, isn't it? Does anyone get any evidence of this?
Like, no.
Just go, spider.
Yeah, one spider, but 1,500 people. But basically, the same things documented in Italy. These big, massive groups of people just dancing themselves to death. But in Italy, they decided it was tarantula or scorpion bites, and they called it tarantism. Yeah.
You don't get those in Italy, though, do you?
I don't know.
You might get scorpions, actually.
Yeah,
small maybe. Ones.
You get them in France.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So again, in Italy, the earliest known outbreak was the 13th century, similar sort of time, and. The only antidote known was to dance to particular music to separate the venom from the blood. Hmm. It occurred only in the summer months. As with dancing mania, people would suddenly begin to dance, sometimes affected by a perceived bite or sting, and they were joined by others, who believed the venom from their own old bites was reactivated by the heat or the music.
Dancers... Right, okay.
Right.
No, I think there might be something in this. actually, from like, I'm not a scientist.
Yeah.
I'm thinking maybe there's something in the venom of something, or like a, from a bite, some sort of venom, which causes like muscle spasms. So then people aren't actually dancing, but they're just kind of like
fitting,
shaking and fitting about, and it looks like they're dancing. I mean, I suppose in the context of it all as well, I mean, that's like dancing back then, I suppose, isn't what dancing is today, is it?
No, no.
So I don't really know what dancing would have looked like in that time. I
mean, yeah.
Like, is it ballroom dance? No, that's later, I suppose. I don't know. So it's kind of hard to put it in my mind. But yeah, venom might be a thing. That's you're just people just having muscle spasms and shaking a bit.
Possibly. I still think there's a better explanation.
Oh, right, okay.
And I think you'll side with me on this. So that's Tarantism. So basically, there was the kind of Roman area that was sort of France and Germany and stuff. They called it Dancing Mania. It actually has a kind of Latin name for it, but I didn't write it down because I couldn't pronounce it. But it translates into Dance Mania. So numerous sources discuss how Dancing Mania and Tarantism may have simply been the result of stress and tension caused by natural disasters around the time, such as plagues and floods, and potentially just living in poverty.
Yeah, but that kind of, that happens. Yeah. I say it happens today, but I suppose it's all relative though, isn't it? Like, you know, people in poverty today. People back then, if they viewed people in poverty today, would be like, yeah, sound, you're doing right, aren't you? But the people in poverty today are still in poverty today. So poverty still exists. So natural disasters still happen. But this doesn't seem to have happened since. Or
it's Red Nose Day today, right? But it won't be when you guys are listening to this. It's Red Nose Day today that we're recording this. And I reckon that when you see those videos of Lenny Henry in Africa, them kids aren't dancing.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's exactly the point, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah.
You know, they're like absolutely destitute, you know, desperate for everything, food, water, shelter, you know, everything you could think of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but like you say, they're not dancing around, are they?
No, no. Another one of the theories is that the outbreaks were all staged and the appearance of strange behaviour was due to its unfamiliarity. Religious cults may have been acting out well-organized dances in accordance with ancient Greek and Roman rituals. Despite being banned at the time, these rituals could be performed under the guise of uncontrollable dancing mania.
Okay, no, I'm not buying that either. So it's basically a way of trying to summon the devil or whatever. And people just kind of go...
Dancing.
Using it as an excuse, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, don't think so.
But there's a theory here that I quite like, and I'm going to go to it.
Is this the big event?
This is the big event. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So there's obviously a few theories on Dancing Mania, but one of the most prominent theories is that victims suffered from ergot poisoning, which was known as St. Anthony's Fire in the Middle Ages. So ergots are like a type of fungus.
Okay.
During floods and damp periods, ergots were able to grow and affect rye and other crops. And some historians link ergot poisoning to phenomena like the dancing plagues during the late medieval and Renaissance periods, and even the Salem witch hysteria. Ergotism can cause hallucinations.
Ah, right.
Now, do you remember the Halloween episode? And you were talking about the guy knocking down the walls and the fireplaces, and mold spores can actually get into you and affect your brain and affect your thinking.
Yeah.
So there's a theory that because all these people living in poverty were living in such damp, dank conditions. And interestingly, I noticed that when I was talking about the Italian one earlier, they said it tend to happen during the summer. So if there's a lot of damp and a lot of heat, mold grows.
Spores,
and it can cause hallucinations and potentially cause the dancing.
So people were just tripping out,
basically. Yeah,
just tripping out.
just on.
It's like
on mold.
It's like the '90s. People just having a rave. Like, yeah.
So,
or maybe fighting off a demon. I don't know.
So it's probably just like basically going the hacienda on a Friday night.
Yeah, yeah.
But
that's,
yeah,
it's feasible.
I like that. I like that theory that it is basically, like we said, it's people living in poverty. Now, you think back to like 13th, 14th, 15th century. That's when people used to shit in a bucket and throw out the window and
sleep with the donkeys and stuff. And,
yeah.
On a bale of hay and shit. Yeah.
And, you know, you see, like, obviously it's fictional, but you see films set back then and they are literally just walking through damp roads, squidgy shit underneath their feet. And, you know, hygiene was terrible. And, I mean, I live in quite a modern house and I get mold on the window sometimes.
Yeah, likewise, you know,
don't,
yeah.
Don't
yeah.
clean them. So you think those mold spores. And you know, ergots, this particular type of mold, is known to cause hallucinations.
Mm, okay. So this is like Roman, is it Roman times? Or is it later?
Towards the end of the Roman times, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good thing. I was just thinking because Romans were kind of big on their sort of old public health and things like that and public hygiene and things. But like you said, but yeah, I get
it. This is like, this is France and Germany. This isn't like the bit of, you know, like the Italian bit of the Romans where it was all the beautiful infrastructure. This is more where they'd sort of infiltrated.
Yeah, no, that, yeah, okay. Fairly. So does it happen today then? Has there been cases that you've
No. The only cases that are found are sort of between that sort of 13th and 17th century. So you're talking 16, 1700s. It seems to vanish from the records, really.
Wow.
But what's interesting is I looked into it and there's loads of... It's like what you were talking about the Springheel Jack. There's people that 100 miles apart, they've never met each other, describing him the same.
Yeah.
Now, this same dance mania has happened in different parts around Europe. Back in a time where there's no way that they could have said, there's a load of nutcases in Germany dancing till they're dead. Let's have a go at that.
Yeah, even more so here, like Springheel Jack, like we mentioned last week, it was published in you know, newspaper like the Times and things like that. So people did have access to those stories and things. Mm-hmm. You know, if they could read or whatever, or had access to media at the time.
Yeah.
Whereas here, they don't, do they, really?
No.
You know, it's like, there was not newspapers. There might have been like a town crier or something, but, you know, or the equivalent in those regions, I guess. But yeah, there's not access to sort of the internet or newspapers or anything like that. So yeah, it's kind of... It's more like this. It happened in Springheel Jack that it gets out there, whereas it's not. It's very strange, very very strange.
So that's dance mania. That's what I found out about it. And
so there is a dance that can kill you, after all.
Yes, yeah.
After all your lies, there is.
I feel like I can start sleeping better at night now because I've sort of lived with that. I've lived with that for, what have we been doing this, 6 months now?
Oh, yeah.
Thinking, I don't like to be seen as, you know, someone that doesn't fulfill a promise. And I told the listeners on day one that I had a dance that can kill you. And I thought, I've got to find something here.
And yeah, it turns out, I'm intrigued with this. I want to know more. I want to know more about this fungus and what it does. And if I can get some off the internet.
Yeah. there's more
I'll
on
bob
it.
Round to you, I'll bob round to yours one day, just dancing. That's some of that fungus.
Yeah, I've just been sniffing some ergots.
Get on the ergots.
But yeah, I found there was actually, someone had basically summed it up quite well in a 7-minute YouTube video I watched last night when I was folding the washing. And I'll share that on our Facebook page as well, because it was a really good, nice little video with some dark illustrations and stuff. But I won't share it until people have listened to our podcast first, because I don't want them to say, I'll just listen to this 7 minutes and I need to listen to their hour.
You need to get full in before you get this.
Yeah. And our version's much funnier, more interesting. But I just think it's a really interesting I want to, I mean, we say this about a lot of episodes like Spring Heel Jack. I want to research more into this. I want to, like you said, find out more about it.
Yeah,
I'd like to see a map of Europe and see little red dots for where it was reportedly happened, see how far widespread it was. Maybe try and...
It's like a bit like a conga.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just the same dance, one big line from Strasbourg to Rome. It's just the thought, I mean, it talks about a dance going on for months.
Yeah.
Can you imagine you go away for 3 weeks holiday, come back, fucking bastard's still dancing again.
Imagine if it was happened to you and like your wife or your partner would just be like, for God's sake, yeah. We're going on holiday. Just pack it in.
I know. But like, I mean, the first woman says she danced for a week.
A week.
But I'd like to know, do they stop? I mean, if you need a poo, do you
probably
stop?
Just do it.
Do they just do it? Is it?
Well, I don't know if it's like an hallucination.
Yeah.
There must be like sort of, maybe there's like a moment of clarity at some point. Yeah. You go, oh, bloody hell, actually, what am I doing here?
Maybe like when you let your dog off its lead and it's hairing round the wood, non-stop, and suddenly it stops, shits, and then runs again.
Yeah. Like, you know? What am I doing here? Like,
yeah.
Oh, it's this.
But no, I thought it was interesting. I hope.
Yeah, very. I am going to have a look into that fungus. Actually, I want to know if it's, because I think that's the most feasible explanation for it.
Yeah,
I said, some neurological kind of episode that just makes these people kind of dance. But it's kind of like, so if that's in kind of like the wheat or the bread that they're eating, then I would assume that they'd have to consume more of it. Like, one dose wouldn't make you dance for a week, I wouldn't have thought. It would have gone through your system.
I suppose so, yeah.
So I think if it's in the bread, then they're just constantly eating it. Mm-hmm. They might kind of, like, dance for 12 hours, go, oh, bloody hell, I'm knackered, I need some bread and shit. And then the bread just triggers it again for sort of 12 hours. So,
and you can kind of understand if someone's mildly hallucinating and they're walking down the street and they see a load of people dancing, they'd probably be more inclined to just walk over and start dancing themselves.
It's like coming home from a nightclub.
Yeah. Hey, hey. Just join in. Fuck it. Oh, look, they're dancing. That looks smashing. I'm going to go and dance too. The hallucination thing, I think, to me, is the most likely, because they say that, you know, the stress of being poor and stuff like that, I mean, not on the same level. I've been poor recently and not really felt like dancing. The last thing I felt like doing. So I just thought that the hallucination was right. I think religious cults could make you dance to a degree. Could they make you dance to death?
Nah.
You know, you'd say, oh, I'm dancing for Jesus, but I'm knackered now, so I'll dance for Jesus again tomorrow.
Hmm.
Not that, no, was Jesus.
Very good.
Yeah, Jesus was about then, wasn't he? Yeah.
Jesus was a dancer.
Yeah. He was a thing before then, wasn't he? Yeah, 1300s. Oh, yeah, because it starts at zero when Jesus was supposedly born.
Yeah, get BC.
Cut all that out.
AD. Okay, right. Wonderful. Thank you very much for spending the time to do your research and talking.
Well, the mad thing is, I did research this week. It was like, normally I pick a subject and, you know, like we said, half an hour before we come online, go, fuck, I better. I actually did research. I've been reading it all week.
Stop saying that, actually. We need to sort of give the illusion that it's highly researched. And
I think the listeners can tell when it's been researched.
Like, right, okay.
You
well,
ask me a question, I go, I don't know.
Don't know, mate. Don't even know what I'm talking about. Right, well, my kebab's on its way, so I'm going to get going, I think.
Excellent.
But thank you very much for your time.
Well, it's been a pleasure, as always. So yes, that's been the most dangerous podcast. I'll see you next week, James.
Take care, everyone. See you next week, Fraser. Thanks very much. See Cheers, you. Bye.
Bye-bye.